views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is November 21st, 2022. It's almost Thanksgiving. To be rebroadcast on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org on November 23rd of 2022. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She is off and running to work so that we can be off and running in the Manchester Road Race on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day. So anyway, she had to go to work today, and so she won't be with us today. So if you need to check in with us, you can certainly do that, but I may not be able to answer all of your text back, but I'll try my best. Anyway, this is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page right down here, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. I'm recording my shows on Monday now using Facebook Live and then playing them at normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at WHUS 91.7 FM. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. Ron's rant of the week. At what point do you throw in the towel with the weather and riding outside? Okay, so it's cold out. It's very cold out. And, you know, because we're up here in the Northeast, for any of you that are listening to me from all over the place, and I know I have people all over the world that listen and people all over the country that listen, and I know your weather may not be exactly what we have here. Fortunately, our weather is not what they had in Buffalo, New York this past weekend, which they got 6 feet of snow. Yay, 6 feet of snow. That's a lot of snow. That's really hard to ride your bicycle in. But anyway, there are people that will do it. They will put studded tires on and, you know, appropriate weather gear and all that. But anyway, here's my feeling about it. I got a little checklist, okay? The checklist is, first thing you do when you're looking at going out on what I will call a questionable cycling day is that you check the weather. Now, I've got, I don't know, one or two or maybe, you know, maybe three or four different weather sites that I check on a pretty regular basis. And hello, Bill, and hello, Billy. Yay, everybody's here. And Rob also. Hello, guys. So you got to check your weather. You got to check and see what this weather place says and what that one says. And, you know, it kind of becomes a bit of a science, because the science of weather is that they usually up here in the Northeast don't know what they're talking about. And it's confusing because we have different weather patterns. We've got a lot of different curveballs that are thrown when it comes to the weather. So I have to check at least two or three, maybe sometimes four sites and see what everyone is saying about what the weather is. I go to my thermometer. I've got one on the north side of my house. I've got one on the west side of my house. They have different readings depending on what time of day it is. And, you know, you're checking to see what the weather is. It's just kind of a thing you do when you're dealing with, you know, what am I going to be riding my bike into and such. So I give that 4 minutes of time to do that, to check the weather. All right. And then, after I've done that, you see, the thing about the weather too, is you have to also check and see which way the wind is blowing from and make the decision. Do I ride out into the wind? Do I ride out with the wind at my back? My personal choice is to ride out into the wind and then turn around and get blown back to wherever I started. So that's the way I usually do it. Even if I'm doing a loop, you know, I just try to make sure that I get that wind coming in at my backside on the latter part of the ride, just because it's easier to deal with. And this time of year, when you're dealing with us up here in the Great Northeast, we have lost all our leaves. So you are also, you're also dealing with, more wind because there's more exposure out there. And now you have to make a decision of the route with the least wind. And, am I going to be doing more hills because of that? And now you've got to figure out, where you're going to go because of this, because you kind of have to put together, okay, I was planning on going to this place today, but that's not really going to work because the wind pattern changed. Now I've got to go to a different place. And so you have to make all these decisions. So choose the route with the least wind. This should happen also while you're checking the weather. Add another 4 minutes on there. So now we're up to 8 minutes there. So getting dressed. What shall I wear? Okay, well, I looked at the weather and I saw that the temperature is going to get up to this number. So therefore, I know what I'm comfortable at this number. But of course, and if you're listening to this on a podcast and not watching my visuals here, I'm raising my hands up and down. So I should probably be a little more descriptive here. But anyway, if there's going to be as much of a temperature change as 10 or 15 degrees, you kind of have to dress for what? The coldest part of the day, the warmest part of the day? That's a decision that is a personal decision and you have to make. Anyway, throw in choosing the clothing for the rides, shoes, jackets, layers, gloves, etc., shoe covers, varmints, whatever it is that you're going to do to be able to handle the cold weather. Throw 5 minutes at that. Okay, so we're going to throw 5 minutes at that. And then you got to get dressed. So you've chosen all your clothing, you got it all laid out, and now you're going to get dressed. So you're going to put on all your clothes, and you are doing layers on layers and layers because it's cold outside and you're trying to figure out exactly how to do this. Tag another 5 minutes on. Approximate time to get ready, 15 to 20 minutes. Just a guess. I know some people are more efficient than others. If I'm waiting for Fran, it's longer than that. I will say that with and waiting for a comment that I'll get back on that one. But anyway, depends on who you are as to how long it takes you to get ready. But let's call it 15 to 20 minutes. By the time you've checked the weather, you've made your decision about where the ride is going to go, you've done all the fine tuning of it as far as what's going on there. I'm not even talking about putting air in the tires on your bike or anything like that. That's a said and done. You did that the night before, right? Well, maybe you didn't. But anyway, and then when you get done with your ride, you have to undress. You have to hang the clothing that didn't get destroyed by bad weather, say rain or sloppy roads or whatever, and can be reused for the next ride. And you have to take all this other clothing and you have to put it into the laundry and anyway, clean the bike if the weather was bad. Could be anywhere from, 5 to 15 minutes there, could be another 5 minutes to undress and get all this clothing off. So the total prep and cleanup time is going to be 20 to 30 minutes. How long's your ride? Well, I'm going to go out and ride for an hour. So you're going to spend 20 to 30 minutes to go out and ride for an hour. And then you're adding this 20 to 30 minutes onto your hour-long ride. And it's like, or you could ride indoors or do something more suitable for the climate and stay and day and do something outdoors that's not on your bike. I know it's a bicycle show. This is what we talk about. We talk about bikes, but that's what it is. Oh, Cindy says go to Key West. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a really good idea because it's definitely warmer down there, although it is breezy, very breezy. You freeze to death. Billy also says, I freeze to death in August. It's all true. It is all true. Kevin, I got one for you, so stick around. I see you're up on the screen here, so stick around. I got a new event for us. No, well, we'll talk about it. Talk about it another time. But anyway, we'll get to that later on in the show. So my point is that I can just simply put a pair of shorts on and a jersey or a t-shirt and hop on my trainer and ride. And it's warm. And I don't have to worry about the weather. I don't have to even look outside and see the weather if I don't want to. I can just get my hour in on the bike indoors. Or I can do what I did this morning, which is I'm in a routine of teaching indoor cycling classes. So I was up at the community center this morning at 5:45 teaching a class. Got my hour in. That's it. Got my hour in, got in a little bit of weights, got, did the things I needed to do. Boy, I was warm. I was just really warm. It's very nice. Anyway, I like being warm. I really do. So I know I'm a cranky old guy, but you know what? I'm very, very I'm a sensitive cranky old guy, and I'm sensitive to the cold. And not so much to the heat, much more to the cold, definitely. Okay, on a positive side, I know he's watching, so I'm going to shout out to Billy Too Tall Dujac and also to Laura Mullaly, and of course, best wishes from us on your speedy recoveries. And I know they're coming along and doing well, so great. Let's get back on those bikes again soon. And Billy, of course, was out on his bike on Saturday, a ride which I was supposed to go to until I looked at the weather, and then I went, nope, not doing it. That's it. I'm out. I'm out. I'm out. Because I'm a wimp, and I'll admit it. I'll totally admit it, Billy. I will. Don't like being cold. Just don't like the whole idea. But there are things you can do about that. We'll get on to that in a second. More things, positive things. Cross Nationals are coming to Hartford. We're getting closer, folks. Whoa, are we getting closer? Big shout out to Dave Hildebrand on that. I'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. If you were at Cross Nationals last time in 2017, you know what the excitement is. It's really cool. We could get any kind of weather. Speaking of weather, cyclocross doesn't seem to matter what the weather is. People will show up anyway. It doesn't really matter. The other thing that I wanted to list on the positive side is I went to the bicycle game opening reception on Thursday evening at the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. Very cool. Very, very cool. Lots of people I haven't seen in a long time that were there checking it out, and we're there because it's an interesting display which is taking place. And it's a really interesting format that they're doing. I will have more about on this in the future. We're talking, I am talking right now with their marketing people about probably doing a remote podcast there, just to kind of walk you through what you can expect to see when you go to this exhibit. And the exhibit, of course, is it's all about the history of bicycles in Hartford. And Hartford, Connecticut was a big area for the bicycle industry from the very, very beginning, from the get-go. So pretty cool stuff. There's lots of great information. And they make it into a game, which is really interesting because you go and you play these little games as you're walking through the exhibit and you're learning as you go along. Huge, huge thing if you've got kids and you want to bring them into the whole idea of this is what cycling is all about. This is how it started. Look at these crazy bikes that people used to ride. There's some great old bikes there. Mark Twain's old penny farthing is there. Pretty cool. Pretty neat stuff. So it's a fun exhibit and totally, totally worth doing. If you are coming out to Connecticut for the Nationals in December, you gotta go. You gotta go. This is definitely especially if you're bringing your family with you and you want to find some things to do around Hartford when you're not, out racing your bike, you can go over to the museum and check it out. It's very cool. It's going to be there for a long time also. It's going to be there into next year, deep into next year. So this is something that you definitely want to check out because it's cool. It's just cool. It's all about bicycles. That's why we're Bicycle Talk. One more thing on my list of positive sides, Cranksgiving. Ever hear of it? I'll have more in the show. We'll go back to that. Mechanical Minute and cycling tips. Speaking of the cold, because, baby, it's cold outside. Speaking of the cold, let's see, how to keep your feet warm while you're cycling in the winter. Well, there you go. That's always a challenging thing to do. So I figured we would talk about it here a little bit and see what we can come up with. Yeah, here it is. So The agony of defeat, as I like to call it. The agony of defeat. Very funny. Ha ha. It's a problem. Feet get cold. Feet are, you know, exposed to the wind the entire time. They're moving around rapidly, but you're not really generating a lot of heat down there. So your feet get cold, and they make all sorts of ways of dealing with this. But I have yet to have experienced one that actually works for me. So that's why I ride indoors in the wintertime. That's what I do. So anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about your feet and trying to stay warm. So how do you keep your feet warm? Overshoes, or what they call booties. In our country, we call them booties. In England, they call them overshoes. So it's a traditional way of keeping your feet warm. It adds a layer of insulation over the top of your cycling shoes. And you can get from anywhere from lightweight ones to, wind-blocking ones, covers that will actually be waterproof if you're riding in the rain. You know, it'll keep your feet dry. And you can use those even in the summertime if you're trying to keep your feet dry. But just a basic windproof model will definitely cut the breeze affecting your toes. And when you go to colder conditions, you're going to be looking more for some sort of insulation between that windbreaking layer and also your shoe itself. Another problem that does happen, and this is definitely something that I certainly run into, is my feet will be very warm, and then you'll put these overshoes on, and even though it has... even though you're at the point where, you know, you are breaking the wind and you're keeping things warm and all, sometimes you keep your feet a little too warm and then your feet sweat. And once your feet sweat, then you run into the problem of them getting cold because they're wet. So what do you do there? Adding bulkier socks kind of screws up your circulation, because unless you're using an extra large shoe, some people go to larger shoe sizes. That's a possibility. And then put a thicker sock in there. I tend to be more of a thin wool sock kind of guy. I really like wool a lot. It seems to work really well for me, and it wicks that moisture off that you're getting and keeps your feet a little bit more comfortable. Still not comfortable enough for me to go out and ride my bicycle below 40 degrees, but that's me. We're all different. That's the way it works. So you can also, if you're looking to generate a little bit more space inside your shoe and you're using a thicker sock, you just pull the inner sole out of the inside of your shoe, and that'll give you a little bit of extra room. Some people swear by two sets of thin socks. I am definitely one of those. I will put two sets of thin socks on instead. That seems to work pretty good. Don here, he wears triple layers of socks. It works. It definitely works, because one layer gets wet, then it comes out to the next layer, then it comes out to the next layer. By the time you get done, hopefully your ride's over and your feet won't get cold. You can, do other things. You can modify your shoes. You want to take a look at your shoes real carefully, because some shoes, like my road cycling shoes that I ride with, they have vents on them. And that just does not work once it gets cold outside. Really nice when you're riding on a warm day and you want to keep your feet cool. That's great. Great idea. Sucks in nice cool air when you're riding down the road. Beautiful thing. But not so much when you're in the cold. So the shoes that I purchased years ago actually came with a special set of vent covers, little toe covers that went over the front of the shoes. And you could at least shut the vents off by doing that. But, mesh panels in the upper part of the shoes, you got to figure out a way to block those off for sure. You could do the old-fashioned way of doing it, and there's nothing to be said about anything being wrong with a good old roll of duct tape, because you can do a lot with duct tape. But those are the things you could do. The mini toe-only overshoes, not so good. I don't really like them that much. So what else? You can go to a winter-specific shoe. They make them. They're really, really nice. They're pricey, but they are generally insulated. They're made of a heavier outer material, so they've got a little bit more protection there. They often will have a higher cuff on them, and they'll have a certain degree of waterproofing also. So winter cycling shoes are certainly an investment that you can apply to your wardrobe. But the question is, how much are you going to use them, and is it worth it to do that? Sigh. Well, again, my answer. Heated overshoes and insoles. Okay, so you can get now, there are companies out there that make the shoe covers that we've been talking about, or as they call them in England, overshoes. That actually have heat elements going through them, and that will keep your foot warm too, because you've got this heat source going through. They usually are either battery operated or they're rechargeable in some way with the USB. Same thing with the insoles. Those I think are probably a little more effective than the outer covers are. You can still use regular non-heated outer covers and then have insoles that are heated also and rechargeable. I think that might be a better option as far as that goes. And you can use those for other things too. You can use them when you're out hiking. You can use them when you're cross-country skiing. They've got multiple uses, so maybe not a bad idea. They're real popular with skiers and motorcyclists, and now, with the improved battery technology, they're also pretty good for cyclists. So definitely kind of a cool way to go. You could definitely do that. Mud guards. All right. Mud guards, fenders, whatever you wish to call them, they will keep you and your bicycle dry. So if you're going out and you're riding in the foul weather, the colder weather, or you run into a snow squall, had that happen a few times, or maybe even a short shower or whatever, and the roads get really wet, and boy, once that water starts spraying up on you and your clothing gets wet and your feet get wet, you're kind of in trouble. But boy, a good set of fenders solves that problem, and they look silly, and although maybe they don't if you're a fender type person. But they work. They're really, really effective. I remember a road ride I showed up to many, many years ago when I was first getting into cycling, when I was training for racing, and there was a training ride that was going off sometime during the week, and so we all met, and I showed up, and I had fenders on my bike. And all the guys are looking at me and they're going, yeah, looking at you, pointing at them, and thinking it was really silly. And I had to retrofit them because it was a racing bike, and I had to kind of make things work because eyelets were not present. So I made it work, and I had fenders on my bike. And they're all kind of laughing at me and going, oh, those are goofy looking. Blah, 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 blah. Everyone sat on my wheel that day. Wonder why. All right. So anyway, they work, and they don't rooster tail you in the back, and they also keep you from spraying the people behind you as well as yourself. Fenders are a great idea if you're going to continue to ride in the bad weather. Certainly is the way to go. So I think that those are kind of my basics. The other thing that I found when I was doing some research on this is I found that there are now these really interesting electric socks that you can get too. Little heating elements going through socks, which will keep your feet warm. So another kind of interesting idea. I have not tried any of this yet, so I don't have any real answers for you. If anyone out there has tried, then I'm certainly willing to listen to what you have to say. I'd like to be able to share this information, but I'm thinking that I'm such a cold-blooded guy as far as the winter time goes. I am believing that the electric insoles or electric socks are probably the answer for me if I were to be doing that. That's just what I'm saying. What else have I read about too? I also read this kind of interesting thing about a warming kidney belt. Okay, the kidney belt, basically they make them in fleece and they make them in wool, They make them in a lot of different things, but it wraps around and it keeps your kidneys warm. So by keeping your kidneys warm, that's where all the major blood flow, it's going back and forth through the core of your body. And if you can keep that warm, then it'll keep your extremities a little bit warmer. Haven't tried it. I don't know how it works, but I have heard that through a person or two that I have talked to, that it's really kind of the answer. It really makes a big difference because it keeps your blood warm all the time. So your body doesn't have to spend as much time keeping your core warm because you're keeping the blood warm that way. Sort of a little bit of trickery on the body, but it also keeps sending warm blood back out to your extremities. So yeah, I'm a big believer in wool too, Bill. I think wool is the answer. I've got so much wool. I've got wool that has moth holes in it. I don't throw it out because it's another layer, which is really nice. I'm a big believer in wool. I like wool a lot, especially if you get a good merino wool, which is not as itchy and problematic as far as that goes. And you can get it really, really thin and put a couple of those wool layers on. Boy, you're warm. It's really nice. Last answer on the cold feet. Last answer. Get rid of the cycling shoes. Put a set of flat pedals on your bike. I know my friend Chris did that. He commented back to me a couple of weeks back where his truck was in the shop and he needed to use his bicycle to get back and forth to work, and he froze the first time he did it, and then he put a set of flat pedals on his bike and wore his hiking boots, and he went, wow, what a difference. So you're wearing a pair of boots that are definitely more prepared for the cooler weather, that sort of thing, especially if they're like a Gore-Tex boot or something like that. They'll also be able to shed off water if you've got that problem, and you just ride with an old set of flat pedals. I mean, this is winter. This is not the time of year that we need to be really putting in a lot of serious miles. If you want to do serious training, then go indoors. Go indoors with it, you know, where you can work, you can get the consistency you're looking for, and you can get everything you need there. But if you have to use your bike to commute with, and or you're just out running errands or whatever, you're doing pedaling runs, you know, one day a week, park your car, ride your bike, little discipline there. Then, you know, just a set of hiking boots on a set of flat pedals works great. It really makes a big difference. And there you can probably put a little bit thicker layer of socks underneath your hiking boots, and voila, problem solved. So let's move on into the content of the show here, because I've spent a lot of time on this and we're going to go forward. First of all, a big shout out to David Hildebrand. David Hildebrand is involved very seriously with the National Cyclocross Championship Committee, and he has been doing course layout for them over at River, over here, at this place right here, Riverfront Park in Hartford, which is where the Nationals will be. That's where they were back in 2017. That's where this sweatshirt comes from. 3 different years of Riverfront races that I promoted over there. So it's kind of a cool spot. It's got it has when I first went there, I thought it had limited possibilities, and then I got creative, and now Dave's gotten creative, and there's a YouTube video. If you go to the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, you can find the link to that video, and you can watch, and you can kind of see how it works. Well, yesterday David was out there with a bunch of people. He said he had almost 100 people sign up to help out on this, which would be wicked cool if that really happened. But they were putting stakes in the ground, stakes and ribbons, yesterday early, and just kind of, you know, scouting out the course and laying out the course. And then he took people for rides, showing them the course, showing them what it was. And there's a comment on Facebook from the Farmington Valley Youth Cycling Group, which is a member of the CCAP group. And it says, "A cold and breezy but fun day for the kids and coaches, previewing the 2022 Cyclocross Nationals course. Thanks, David Hildebrand and Riverrun Recapture Crew for hosting." So that was kind of a cool thing. And so I had planned on going there, but I got a little wrapped up in this other thing that happens here in the fall and winter, and that it was a big UConn basketball day. So I had tickets to games in Hartford, and unfortunately, I couldn't help because I was involved with getting to the games on time and watching the UConn men and the UConn women play yesterday. What a blast. What a blast. It's going to be a big year if you're a basketball fan. We like to refer to ourselves as the basketball capital of the world because we have this crazy basketball following here in Connecticut, and we don't really have a lot of professional sports here. So basketball is kind of a big deal. It is our professional sport. So it's fun and very entertaining. So I missed the setup out there, but I will touch base with Dave and make sure everything was right. I have signed up for a couple of days of setup on a few days before national starts, so maybe the week before or something. I think I'm involved with 2 different days of setup, so I will be out there for that. And also, there is a link on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page for cross national setup, and if you want to volunteer, then you can you get 2 things out of that. First of all, you get the satisfaction of helping put on a very major local event that is now a national event. And the second thing you get is you get a wristband, and that wristband gets you in for free throughout the championship week. So pretty cool stuff. Definitely worth it. Definitely worth a few hours out of your day if you can do it. There's different times you can sign up for, mornings or afternoons, or you can go all day if you want. They still need more people. They need people for registration. They need people for packet pickup. There's certainly a job for you if you are interested in getting involved. So I will continue to shout that out. Also, this is another one. This one just kind of flipped across my page here, and I just got to see if I can find it on here. And this is not here, not here, not here. Anyway, there is a come on. Oh, here it is. This is another shout out to a gentleman by the name of Philip Keys. Oh, here he is right here. I had it over here. Okay. So Philip Keys was the former director of the New England Mountain Bike Association, and he helped bring legitimacy and organization to the mountain biking during his tenure. This was published on October 18th and through Bicycling Magazine. And Phil, he led the New England Mountain Bike Association through a period of unprecedented growth, passed away on Wednesday, November 16th. He had suffered severe injuries when his motorcycle and another vehicle collided near his home in Acton, Massachusetts on October 31st, 4 days before his 64th birthday. He's going to be receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award posthumously at NEMBA's 35th anniversary celebration at Highland Mountain Bike Park in Northfield, New Hampshire, on Saturday, November 19th. That would have been yesterday, or 2 days ago, excuse me. And the accident investigation is still ongoing on that, so we don't really know what happened there. But anyway, he did a lot. Unfortunately, he passed away from his injuries, and that's really sad. But he did a lot of really good things for mountain biking here in New England. And the NEMBA grew from a Massachusetts-based group with 5 chapters to about 1,000 members to a regional power with more than 30 chapters and more than 8,000 members. During that time, he and NEMBA fought for trail access through the Northeast, completed the groundbreaking 2003 purchase of Vietnam, which is a 47-acre riding mecca just west of Boston, and launched NEMBA Fest, the region's largest annual fat tire celebration. It's an impressive record for a guy who got his first fat tire rig in 1991. So, anyway, it's sad to see him go, but here's a guy who did what I ask everyone here to do, and that is give back to the sport you love. You don't really know what your time is like on the earth, and it sure is nice if you can help out while you're here. But anyway, that's a little shout out to Philip Keyes, and my best to his family and friends on that one. Next thing I have here on my content, Cranksgiving. Isn't that a funny thing? It's like Thanksgiving. It's not, but it's Cranksgiving. So this one completely, you know, I remember talking about this last year, and I guess the dates kind of really slipped completely by me. But there is this event called Cranksgiving, and it's a food drive on two wheels, part bike ride, part food drive, part scavenger hunt. And it's been held annually in New York City since 1999. And what you do is you bring a bike, a bag, a lock, and about $15 or $20 to buy food. All the food collected at grocery stores benefits your local charity. Every year, they provide thousands of needy families with a wealth of food during the week of Thanksgiving. So, kind of a cool thing. And let's see here if they got this. This is the about. Okay. So, oops, I just missed my click. So anyway, that's it started out, if I remember correctly, it started out as an alley cat. And yes, it began its life as an alley cat, which is the old single speed bike messenger folks, a scrappy urban race held by bike messengers designed to emulate the busy and often grueling schedule of messenger workday. Riders were given checkpoints and tasks to complete for bragging rights of being that city's fastest rider. In 99, New York City messenger Antonio Tone Rodriguez brought up a different kind of alley cat, one that would help less fortunate during Thanksgiving holiday. And this alley cat would be primarily for charity. On November 20th of 99, the first Cranksgiving took place. So, neat idea. Kevin, I know you're out there. I know you're listening. There's no Cranksgiving in Connecticut. These generally take place in early November, it looks like, by the looks of the, when you go to the website and you look to see where they are. There's a bunch in New York for sure. There's one in Rhode Island, maybe Fall River, possibly. Possibly one up in the Boston area, but there's nothing in Connecticut. So, just when we are feeling like we've got way too much on our plates and, we want to organize another event, this one's kind of cool. It's kind of a neat idea. So we use it to, I'll get more about it. There is a website, and it's cranksgiving.org. Yes, cranksgiving being one word, .org. And if you go there, you can see all the different things that are happening. There's a how to organize one, how to ride one, where you can ride, that sort of thing. There's posters and great artwork available, and there's a sponsors page and press coverage and all that kind of stuff. So there is yet another really cool thing that we could do for cycling here in Connecticut, if anyone is interested, not just Kevin, because Kevin's, he's a workhorse. He's out there doing all sorts of stuff. He's got a big bike rodeo thing coming up in the spring, and he's diligently working at that. So I give a lot of credit as far as that goes. Bill Bell? The Bill Bell? Really? Wow, cool. Is it too late to host it? Maybe for Christmas. That's another idea. We could do that. That's an idea, Kevin. Let's see how ambitious we feel. I got some things coming up, so we'll see. But possibly. Is that the Bill Bell from Florida and occasionally from Connecticut that is listening right now? That's cool. Anyway, and a blast from the past. So Cranksgiving is kind of a cool thing, and it is kind of come and kind of gone, but it is Thanksgiving weekend coming up. Those of us who are crazy enough to participate in the Manchester Road Race, the annual Manchester Turkey Day Road Race, we both Fran and I will be there. It'll be my 37th year of running the Manchester Road Race. I'm not going to say I'm running it. I'm going to say I'm participating in it. I have reduced myself to the, or maybe I've accelerated to the point of just running at party pace and keeping it real and fun. And it's just a good time. It's something you do before you eat turkey on Thanksgiving. That's what you do. Or whatever it is that you do eat on Thanksgiving. So it's just kind of a cool thing. But that's where Fran and I will be on Thursday morning. We're going to be out doing that, and that's fun. But Cranksgiving, I like this idea. I like this idea a lot. It's really, really good. We have a local food pantry here. We have a soup kitchen here, which both could benefit from something like this. Thinking that we get the wheels in motion for next year. We might be able to do something for Christmas, Kevin, if you're interested, but we'll see. So that's it. That's Cranksgiving. And I thought that was kind of a neat thing. It came up on my news feed. Let's see. What else do I have here on the feed here for today? We also have another one that slipped completely by me. Did not see this until, of course, it happened. Unfortunately, the news sometimes travels slower than things that are actually happening. There was yesterday, I believe the 20th of November, there was something called World Remembrance Day. The World Day of Remembrance for Road Traffic Victims is commemorated on the third Sunday of November each year. It is now on my calendar, and I will try to pay attention to this. It's a high-profile global event to remember the many millions who have been killed or seriously injured on the world's roads and to acknowledge the suffering of all affected victims, families, and communities. Millions added each year to countless millions already suffering, a truly tremendous cumulative toll. The day has also become an important tool for governments and all those whose work involves crash prevention or response to aftermath of crashes, since it offers the opportunity to demonstrate the enormous scale and impact of road deaths and injuries. Call for an end to the often trivial and inappropriate response to road death and injury, and advocate for urgent, concerted effort to stop the carnage. So on World Day, we also pay tribute to dedicated emergency crews, police, and medical professionals who deal daily with the traumatic aftermath of road crashes. So kind of interesting, not too many in the U.S. I see one in Los Angeles, one in Louisville, Montgomery County, I'm not sure where that is. Manatee County is in Florida. Delaware, and then Orlando in Florida also. That's all that was listed on this year's. So this is kind of an unknown event, but certainly has some serious cycling ties as far as that goes. There's a whole lot that you could do to get involved with this, which is, it was brought up on Streets Blog, which is where I found that. If you're looking for another great site for advocacy, streetsblog.org. You might want to check that out. So there's very few monuments out there for people that have been killed or injured, seriously injured in on the roads. And it's the only way that we get the attention is to start raising attention. So raising attention is definitely a thing to do. Super, super important. I think that there are certainly a bunch of ideas out there as far as that goes. I thought I had some on here. Yeah. So here we are. So here's how it works. Recognize deadly patterns in your community and work to change them in your town, city, or state. If it's not already tracking and publicly sharing information about where traffic injuries and fatalities are happening, push for them to do so. Demand that transportation leaders analyze severe crash data alongside demographics to better understand which populations are most impacted. So, spoiler alert, traffic safety is usually worst in communities of color and low income because theirs are the streets that are most often designed in dangerous ways. To move on this, don't take no for an answer. Vision Zero, which we've talked about in past episodes of this show, Vision Zero is advocates a pushback to fight to save lives. There's so here are the pushbacks that we get. You hear this all the time. There's not enough money or not enough staff. It, that our community is different, so those solutions won't work. Or even that people are just crazy and things will never change. None of these excuses are acceptable. There's always enough money to save lives, and dangerous driving behaviors will change if we effectively change the environment and systems in which we move. So don't take no for an answer. Next on the list here, recognize our agency. The very people who are likely to say that achieving Vision Zero is impossible are often those who have the most power to achieve it. Interesting. Even if they don't realize it, funds and staffing can be found when politicians want to find them, especially when voters join forces and demand safe streets. Don't let anyone slow walk safety, because effective improvements can be made quickly and cheaply if we demand them. This is a big word. Safe. Safety. Safely. Big word. Okay, really big word. It is a word that has been used in the advertising industry for so many years, and it has been selling automobiles, it has been selling baby seats, it's been selling, you know, strollers for kids. It focuses, that word focuses heavily on the female population, which tends to be more into caregiving than the male population is. And so therefore, it's a word, it's a buzzword in advertising, which has really, really caught a lot of attention. When you go to a town meeting and you make a presentation, if you are not using the word safe, safety, or safely in your presentation at least a half a dozen times, you're not going to get the attention that it deserves. So use that word. It's super important. It really, really works well. It grabs people's attentions. Everyone wants to be safe, right? It's really the way it is. That's the whole point of most of what we do here to protect people in our society. It's all about safety and being safe and feeling like you're safe. You know, even if feeling like you're safe is not really right, like, you know, painted lines on roads that indicate a bike lane, like I talked about last week, which is not safe at all, actually proven to be unsafe. That's the previous episode. If you're wondering what the heck is this guy talking about, check out last week's episode if you could, please. And, you know, the auto industry is... so here it is. Right now, though... The leaders they're failing us. Too many of America's roads are designed for speed and not for safety. The auto industry is supersizing their motor vehicle fleet, and those decisions are hurting and killing in record numbers of innocent people every day. Meanwhile, tax dollars are funding the next generation of electric vehicles that may reduce emissions, but no less dangerous for other road users, including the fact that I drive a sometimes electric vehicle. That's what I like to call it. It's a hybrid. So there are times that it's electric. There are times it is not electric. I cannot even begin to tell you how many people, even though my car makes a funny noise when it's going forward in a parking lot, when I'm in a parking lot, I'm generally on electric power, and my car just, it scares the devil out of people. I cannot believe how many people like jump back when they see my car, because they weren't really looking for it because they couldn't hear it. So as much as that idea of making noise outside the car is a great idea, I don't think it's loud enough. And I don't really want it to be louder, but maybe it needs to be louder. It's kind of weird. I just had someone in Hartford on Sunday when I was at the basketball game. I was in a parking lot just creeping around, because parking lots just scare the crap out of me. They're definitely the most dangerous place to drive your car. if you're looking to for a little fender bender. It seems like they happen all the time there. But I had a gentleman jump back and kind of look at me, and I, you know, I rolled down my window and said, "Sorry, it's electric, it makes no noise." And he said, "Yeah, I didn't even hear you. Wow, that's amazing." And I said, "Well, it does make a little noise, but you really have to, you know, be hearing, you really have to listen for it." And he said, "Well, thank you very much for being careful." And, you know, that was that. Yeah, so our cars are going to continue to run people over, whether they're a pedestrian or whether they're on a bicycle, because that's not what we're paying attention to. Safety is the word. Safe is the word. Safely is the word. Use it in all your presentations. It's really, really important. It will get attention when you say that. So I know that we just did a presentation up at the town of Mansfield, which I talked about a couple of weeks ago, about roundabouts, traffic circles, which I think should be everywhere, especially on the college campus. That we have a very, very busy college campus, about to get a lot busier because they're building more housing with the anticipation of larger enrollments in the future. It's dangerous to be outside of a motorized vehicle when you're trying to transport yourself around that campus. And it's mainly because everyone is in a hurry to get where they got to get to, because they didn't allot enough time, or whatever it is they didn't do, to make themselves drive at excessive speeds in on roads that weren't designed for that or aren't even labeled for that. I don't know what it is, but it is an epidemic, and I look at it as one that can be very, very easily solved with very little cost in comparison to putting in yet more traffic lights. But anyway, traffic calming is the answer. Traffic lights do not calm traffic. They make traffic more neurotic. That's what they do. So, anyway, these are the things that we need to make when we're making presentations. And safety is the word. Safety is the one that catches people's attention. Safe is a great word. It's just a great word. Just ask a marketing person in the automobile industry how important that word is, if you know anyone that's there. And they will respond with a big smile on their face and tell you how much they use it when they're designing or attempting to design a safer vehicle. So, yeah, okay, enough of that. Let's see, what else do we have here on the list here today? We were getting down there. So yeah, let's keep an eye on this a World Day of Remembrance, because it's yet another little tool that we can use to help attract attention to, you know, what's going on in the industry. So I'm going to mention again the bicycle game, and I went to the opening reception this past week, and it talks all about the 1890s and the unprecedented surge in the popularity of bicycles in Connecticut. And that was thanks to entrepreneur Albert Pope and the Hartford-based Pope Manufacturing Company, which was a leader in bicycle production. So it's a cool thing. I think you should check this out. I will be working with them in hopefully a few more weeks, trying to put together a podcast that is going to be a bicycle talk podcast, and we'll do it a live remote from the heart the Connecticut Historical Society. And this may work out really nicely, because they told me that they're closed on Mondays, and we could have a closed session and just go through and do the whole thing, interview the people that were behind the genius of the presentation by making it into a game. It's really kind of cool. It's really kind of cool. When I first heard about it being a game and all, I went, "This is a little weird," but it's not. It's not weird at all. It's really, really clever, and it's a really great way to teach you about, you know, how the whole bicycle industry kind of started in Hartford, Connecticut. Kind of a big deal. So certainly a cool thing that you can go and check out. You know, there's different little rooms and galleries. There's games that you can play. There's some great displays of antique bicycle clothing and lots of stuff that women used to wear when they were riding bicycles. I don't know how you would ride a bicycle with the clothing that they were showing, but you know what? Because to me, it was really big and bulky and cumbersome, but not like today's, where we're a little more stripped down and in our tight lycra and all that. But pretty cool stuff. Definitely cool stuff. I really enjoyed it. I had a really good time with it. So I think that everyone should probably check that out. Remember that we still have some more bike races coming up, and cyclocross races, I should say, here in New England. The Nationals are right around the corner, so there's all sorts of cool stuff. Let's see, we just got through Secret Squirrel and Shed Park. That was this past weekend. Next weekend is Crossburg, which is in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. On December 3rd, it's the Ice Weasels Cometh in Southwick, Mass. It's a big event. They've always had a pretty good following there, but it's huge this year because of Nationals. And the Governor's Guard Rodeo, Avon, Connecticut, the last of the Connecticut series, will be in Avon, Connecticut on December 4th. And then, of course, the 2022 USA Cycling National Cyclocross Championships are from December 6th through the 11th in Hartford, Connecticut. So everything's coming up real soon there. It's really exciting. I'm getting more and more jazzed about it as we go on. I just think it's a really cool thing. Finishing points. Baby, it's cold outside. Are you the rider who spends the time and energy dressing and undressing for the cold? Ah, not me. Continued shout outs to Too Tall Billy and Laura. Heal up. Get back on your bikes. Don't forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historical Society. It's going to be there for a while. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely, there's that word again, ride and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. Please support your local bike shop. Respect one another. It's 2022. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, tell everyone you know. And finally, take on the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Yet, if you have a motorized vehicle, park it one day and use your bike. Just one day a week. You might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar.
This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.